is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Mikolaj Strojinski and Gary Scheinman, and it's just so great to catch up with both of you.
It's our pleasure, Kate. So
great
good
to be here, Kate.
See you actually too, and speaking with you and Gary.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, we missed out on that at GDC, so it's kind of nice to get caught up now a little bit. So it's going to be so much fun to talk with both of you about the soundtrack that you wrote for Metamorphosis from OvidWorks. It's just, it's not like any game I've ever come across, really. It's inspired by a Kafka, actually two Kafka stories, one in which, you know, Gregor is turned into an insect, but also they manage to weave in kind of the plot of the trial as well. And Gregor, as an insect, has to try to help his friend Yosef get atoned or get, I guess, rescued from the powers that be.
Yeah.
So I was curious about...
And you get to be an insect.
Yes, as an insect, and he meets a lot of other interesting insects as well. And so, how did this project come about for you guys? I mean, who reached out to who on this?
Well, it was a couple of years ago. I think it was either late 2017 or sometime in 2018 that I was giving a lecture on video game music in Warsaw. And afterwards, the organizers invited me for a beer. And during that beer, a group of people approached me and asked if I would be interested in taking a look at the game they're working on. And they showed it to me on the phone. And I said, sure, it looks, it looked promising, it looked interesting and original, like it actually turned out. And I said, without any hopes, because, there are times that you are promised a game and that you think you're going to get the game, but the game doesn't really happen until you sign a contract, right? That's the harsh reality. But it did happen. And they invited me over to collaborate with them to compose the music. And then fast forward a year or so, as when I was starting to work on the game and I was looking for the musical color, I was waiting until the game speaks to me what it wants and what it needs music wise. The game was obviously twisted and crazy what's happening in game, so the music had to reflect that. And the deeper I went into the discovery of the music, the more it turned out that to my huge happiness that might be a great opportunity to write some cool atonal music. And I started sketching some ideas and I enjoyed it so much, and for some reason Gary came to my mind. I always wanted to collaborate with him. I had fond memories of him from numerous, video game music conferences like GDC and GameSell conference, and I thought he would enjoy it too. And so I gave him a call, and he gladly joined in. So that's how it happened.
Was it true, Gary? Did you enjoy it?
I hated every moment. No, it's a really cool project. I really enjoyed working on this, and I'm really happy that my friend Mikolaj invited me on board, because it's such an interesting idea. And as soon as I heard it was Kafkaesque, I thought, my God, the term Kafka, his name Kafka, has become a euphemism for the bizarre. So I thought, how interesting, how what an opportunity to do something really unique and cool, and I think it turned out that way too. I think not only was it a good idea, I think Mikolaj and I pulled off something interesting.
what's so fascinating about it, because it really fits the style of the game. The game is set in Franz Kafka's era, and so the music that you guys wrote, it sounds like Anton Webern and Alban Berg and those, you know, new Viennese school composers. So what were some of the challenges about writing that style of music?
Well, it's the expressionist period, and it just made sense because Kafka, I think of Kafka as an expressionist writer, author, and of course he was Czech, but he wrote in German, and the expressionist school I think of is the German sort of school, you know, Schoenberg and Webern and Berg, all those. So for me, it was not, because when I got out of USC, I studied with a guy named George Tremblay, and all I did for 3 years with Mr. Tremblay, who was a brilliant composer, was write 12 tone.
Wow. You know,
that's all he taught. And a lot of people, as a matter of fact, Tom Newman studied with George as well. And so 12 tone has its limitations in terms of a lot of the opportunities that we as composers get, because it is there's just a confining aspects of it. And stylistically, it's only works on certain unique kind of situations. And I thought, well, this kind of fits this game because it is that period, you know?
Yeah. Mikolaj, what were some of the things that you found challenging about writing in this style?
It might sound cheesy, but it wasn't a challenge. It was pure joy, really. I mean, it's the challenge. I guess the challenge was only at the beginning, I guess, to make sure that, you know, we both will sound like the soundtrack will sound cohesive, but it ended up sounding cohesive because of the themes, because of the
orchestra.
We shared themes and a couple of other things. I don't recall the soundtrack as a challenge. It was a very pleasant work that just needed to be done. And I guess, you know, the idea for the soundtrack was a challenge. It was a little bit of time consuming to get it right. So sort of a pre-production of it. But once we got rolling with Gary, it all went really smooth. We barely had any corrections amongst us and with the game developer. Yeah, smooth. And
they had to trust us to a certain extent because we had this concept of adding a vocalist singing in this very sort of period style of Sprechgesang or Sprechstimme. And so they had to kind of trust that this element was going to add something really cool and unique to the score. And we couldn't, since neither of us can sing all that well,
the game is not that bizarre.
So we couldn't demo our voices doing it. And there's no sample library of Sprechgesang.
Blues in a
Wow. Well, yeah, the first time I heard a track with her voice in it, I was listening to it with my husband, and he said, "Oh my God, Sprechstimme!" I mean, because you never hear that in a game. Yeah. So how did you find the soprano? Because she is just phenomenal.
Well, there's a bit of a story behind that, because it was my original idea to include that. And then I found, so I said, I've got a great singer here in L.A. that can do this, I think, you know, because she had worked for me before. And I brought her in, and it didn't work. She couldn't pull it off. And I don't want to blame her, whatever it was. I was actually second-guessing the whole concept. And then so Mikolai said, I told Mikolai, gosh, maybe this is a bad idea. But Mikolai said, no, I'm going to find a singer. And he did. So tell us how you found Joanna.
Well, I think, you know, the problem is you can be an exceptional singer, classical singer, but this style is just so, you know, precise, so unique, that not necessarily you have to feel comfortable doing this. So that might be the reason why the first singer failed, so to speak. I was, to continue what Gary said, I was at that time I was in Warsaw, and I thought to myself, you know, I don't have access to wonderful musicians that LA offers, but I do have, you know, fair amount of great classical musicians around me, being in Europe, and Poland has some strong, you know, classical musical roots as well. So, you know, I just sent email to two or three people, and two of them pointed me towards Joanna Fraschel. They swore that she can pull it off, and so I invited her to my studio, and we you know, she was excited to join in. The funny thing is that neither of the three of us, neither Gary nor I nor she, speaks German, and the soundtrack is sang in German. Because, you know, like Gary said, Kafka was living in Germany.
Was he living in Prague? Yeah, but he wrote in German.
Yeah, and but it was written in German, and Schoenberg was German too. So it all makes sense to continue in German, but we didn't speak German. But you know, she's so good that it really sounds like she speaks German. And so we tried a couple of things, and there was some try and error, and but with time passing, you know, I think we were nailing it more and more with every take, and it was becoming clearer and clearer what really works, what kind of, you know, to take everything under the, to take all the music under the microscope, what kind of musical vocabulary of her worked for the soundtrack very well and what didn't. So the crazier she sounded, the more far away from typical soprano and the more Sprachstimme she did, you know, the better it sounded. And she did a great job. And I sent afterwards, I sent everything to Gary, and I said, Gary, get ready for some gold.
I was overjoyed when I heard that. I was like, oh my, this was my concept. This is my dream for how it should sound. And Mikolai directed with his direction and her fabulous voice and abilities totally pulled it off.
Thank you.
And the cool thing that about Spruckstimme, and I think the reason it really works with this game, is that they wanted a bit of humor and irony. And I think that style has, it's not like ha-ha funny, but it has sort of an ironic, tongue-in-cheek almost quality.
That too, but also the contrast between the fact that you're basically something that resembles a cockroach, and then the music is so serious at times, my part of music resembles that of Bernard Herrmann in many places, and at times that it has his fanfares, and so that also had a sense of humor as a propelling thing, so to speak.
Well, what really struck me about it is that I don't speak German either, apart from a few random words, and so what it provided for me, it was a real sense of disorientation and not being able to understand things, kind of like the situation that Gregor's in, where he doesn't know why he's a bug and he's got to figure out all of this crazy stuff. And so having someone singing in German kind of adds to that sort of confusion and just frustration of not being able to understand.
Yeah, very well put. I agree. It's you don't know what's happening, really.
Yeah. And the way, by the way, the way we mixed it was with and without vocals, because we felt like we wanted to hear the vocal the first time, but if you kept the vocal going, it would be too hard. It would be too distracting.
It's too forward. Yeah. When you have a lead singer and the music is sort of serves as an exploration, you got to be really careful with that so as not to take the player's focus away from the game, from the gameplay. And so what we decided to do is to have the vocal version play first and then have the two or three, I don't remember exactly, two or three non-vocal versions loop and then back to the vocal. So we had to implement it that way.
Well, yeah, because if you're using vocals, you're kind of, you can't just have that repeat over and over and over again. So that was a really cool way of getting more mileage out of that particular music and out of those tracks. Who wrote the texts? I mean, where did the texts come from that you guys used?
Franz Kafka.
Oh, wow.
And Mikolaj Strowinski. and Google Translate.
I mean, I will give credit for my cues. I have a student, Robert Wolf, from last year, and he is German. And I teach at USC in the screen scoring program there. And so he helped me take the verb, some of the parts of the book and work it into to lyrics, because I don't speak German and that's his native language. So he helped me. Now, you did it yourself, Mikolaj. I did not have a third party help you with sort of organizing the lyrics.
Yeah, on my end, I was just choosing lyrics based on kind of what was happening in the game or in the gameplay at the moment, and translating it into German and matching with the melody, or matching melody to the lyrics. So it was something new. I haven't done this before.
Well, I've heard from so many people that setting text is really, really hard. It's like just an extra layer of complication, because it has to scan and it has to make musical sense and also, literal sense too with the text. And so.
Yeah, and I think some languages are easier to do so. Like English language is pretty easy to merge with music. German, Polish, not so much, I would say. Not as much as English.
Yeah. Wow. It's just, it adds such a fascinating polish to the score. And so how did you guys get started? I mean, who wrote, like, the first theme? I'm Gary, you've got, like, the credit for the main theme, but it sounded like when we were talking about this a little earlier that you guys were both working on themes.
We both did themes, yeah, important themes. And I just, you know, Nikolai was more in touch with the developer, although I was talking with him as well. So he sort of became the music director in that sense, because he's in Poland and speaks Polish. Although the Ovid guys speak really good English. I mean, barely accented English. They speak very, very well. But in any event, you know, Nikolai said, well, we'll just divide this up and, you know, why don't you write this? And I just started working on it, you know, and would share it with him and he'd share cues with me. And, you know, a couple of the themes that I use, he incorporated and vice versa. And you know, it some of it was just synchronicity, you know, where it was like, yeah, that really sounds great. And, you know, we don't have to change anything.
The interesting thing to add is that we both started on, and the two themes we incorporated were composed, I would say, at the beginning of the whole process, which was the right thing to do for the soundtrack to sound more cohesive and to have musical logic. But the interesting is that as we both independently worked on our themes, we both independently based our themes on the same musical interval of major seventh.
Yeah.
That
was synchronicity. And, that was, you know.
Yeah, very. Yeah. So it's interesting that we have a slightly different musical background. Our music is slightly different. But the game spoke to us in a very similar way. We received it in a very similar way. And it all blended well together at the end.
Yeah, it did. Gary, you mentioned that there are, you know, limitations with writing serialistic 12-tone music. So did you expand the idea of composing it at all to make it, like, a little bit easier?
Yeah, when I use 12-tone, and I did use it with BioShock Infinite, I don't use 12-tone very often because it's just so limiting and its expressive abilities are limiting. But when I do use 12-tone, I use it freely in the sense that if another note presents itself, because, you know, in a very strict 12-tone technique, you can't use a note again until all the other notes in the chromatic have been used up again. You can then have the opportunity, but I don't restrict myself in that way. If the next note in the series doesn't feel right or sound right, I'm not going to use it. So I'm going to use one that feels right to me. You know, so I use it loosely, shall we say. And in fact, you know, if you go back to the Expressionist period, that was prior to Schoenberg's 12-tone period. It was more like free atonality. And so in some ways, I would call this more free atonality than 12-tone, although I did use some rows because I have all this technique that I learned from this teacher, George Tremblay, years ago, that I can sort of like bring in all this material that sort of gets you composing very quickly, but then you have to form it into music.
Yeah, and and make it interesting to and just follow, you know, if you follow along. So, Mikolaj, did you bend the rules at all too?
Well, I think you have to bend the rules. I mean, you know, setting yourself up with mathematical rules and just not breaking them because there are the rules. It's just that's not where the beauty of art is, really. So the 12th tone is more of a direction, I would say, than the strict rule here. Myself, my part of music is not, I wouldn't say it's 12th tone. Like I said, I did some research on Bernard Herrmann's sound for the soundtrack and incorporated that into my part of music. You know, my rules were to sound like him.
Yeah, that's so cool.
As much as it possible.
Yeah, because those skittering strings and that really kind of tense sound that he would get in the film scores, I could really hear that in this too. And it kind of amplifies the whole idea of all these insects too, having this completely sort of parallel life with humans too. So that must have been a fun challenge.
And that's an important part of the score as well, the insecty uses of instruments in sort of an insect like having insect like sounds, you know, and use orchestration and techniques that do that. Especially we use primarily strings and woodwinds, but primarily strings. Yes. And they really can capture that sort of eerie, you know, insect-like quality.
Yeah, because Gregor's footsteps, I have to say, they kind of creeped me out after a while because they're so like scratchy sounding and just, you know, the way he's creeping around and stuff. And so the music like really amplified that.
I don't know, they're not footsteps though. They're, what are they insect called? What are insect limbs called?
I don't know, legs, I guess. But yeah. Well, there's the transition that Gregor makes from being, you know, speaking English and then going down the corridor, and then his language kind of also morphs into a bug language. And then all of the scenes in the game where he's talking with these other insects is all in this amazingly complex bug language too. And so did that influence the music at all?
I know that the sound designer who had tons of fun with changing his voice into an insect gradually. But as far as the music, no. I think, you know, the sound designer had his fun and his influence by the game, and we had ours. We weren't composing. I don't think Gary either composed with the sound design on. I doubt it was finished even when we were working on the soundtrack.
It really wasn't, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it's such a good blend between the music and then the sound design. And so did you guys have a whole lot of conversations with the audio director?
No, but somehow maybe we felt it again. I don't remember if we felt it or we'd spoken about it. It was a while ago. But it was, you know, naturally not to abuse a percussive instrument, which would be the, you know, instrument family that could potentially interfere with those sound effects. So we didn't use those much.
Yeah, the orchestration that you guys developed is so interesting. And Gary, I love the sound of the vibraphone in your tracks, and it just adds a lot of extra color. And so how did the sort of the instrumentation all get pulled together?
Well, I don't know when we decided. We decided that we would record with an orchestra. And so we both sort of found a were aware of that and wanted to use the instrumentation that matched what we would end up recording with. Though the vibraphone was not recorded in the work with the orchestra, that was all samples. So which is typical, a mix and match of live instruments with samples and synths, whatever. So I think we both were using the same source of instrumentation based upon what we knew we were going to record with, and then adding whatever we thought intuitively. And it's really intuitive what we do. It's like, well, what if I tried this? And then you try it and no, that doesn't work. And what if I tried this? Ooh, I like that, you know, because we have all these tools. We have all these synths and samples and sounds that we can call upon in our toolbox of stuff these days. So I think it's just like intuitive. And like, I think this, and then you try, and the thing is, you get to try, because of the technology, you get to try it at home, you know. And if it's working, you can just record it and send it over. I can share it with Mikolai or with Ovidworks, and if there's something they find that not working, I can take it out, you know. So it's really, I think it, for me, it's and it's just always true. Whatever I write is intuitively. It just, I feel like it's working, and then I share that with my partners, you know, and they're going to give me feedback. Sometimes they'll love it. Sometimes they'll not, and they'll tell you, you know.
It's just remarkable, because listening to the soundtrack just track after track, I really can't tell who wrote what. And so you guys did such a great job synthesizing the sound. It was just, it's really great. So, but you guys weren't even in the same general vicinity, it sounds like. Mikolai, you were in Poland for the whole project?
Yeah, I was in Warsaw. Gary was in LA, and the orchestra was in Macedonia.
That is the age we're living in now, yeah. Where these distances mean much less. Because even if Mikolai was in LA, I don't know if it would made much difference. I'm not going to be running over to Mikolai's house.
No.
In my house, we can just share files. You know, we might grab lunch one day, which we can't do if he's in Poland. Yeah. But other than that, we're really going to work in this manner as well. And this has been true since the first video game I scored in 2004. I was working with people in Brisbane, Australia, you know, on Destroy All Humans, and just sending them files over. They're listening, and telephone calls. Back then, we weren't using Skype or anything, but we just would call or message each other and send files back and forth, and it worked just fine.
And in a way, you guys were already set up to kind of handle the pandemic too then. But I'm wondering if that threw up any challenges that you weren't expecting.
No, we finished it way before the pandemic happened. Yeah. I think we were done. When were we done, Gary, with it? Was it last September? Yeah. Year ago?
Yeah, it's like a year.
October, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, wow. Well, that was good timing then. I'm curious about, you know, all the different areas that Gregor goes to as he tries to get to the ultimate destination of Tower to help Yosef. There are so many interesting places where he goes, like the harbor and all these little in-between places. And I'm wondering if any of those provided inspiration for some of the tracks.
Yeah. The tracks were done for specific locations, really. So naturally, you know, they influenced the music, and you know, from the way also the music naturally got divided is, you know, Gary's stuff was more composed when he was already a bug, and well, my music is more. Deep into hallways and you know, bug hallways and bug villages, whereas my part of the music is more when he is more towards the surface already. Yeah, Gary, say about your locations.
Yeah, the locations were known to me, and typically, and with the same with this game, someone would play the game at Ovid and do a video capture of the game.
Yeah.
And send us those movie files. And then I would have those movie files up. I have two monitors, one with my, you know, main digital audio workstation and the other with Sunk. But knowing that I'm not catching anything, it's just sort of a general vibe of that area, mm-hmm. what it looks like there, what you know, if it's the harbor, what does the harbor look like, you know, or if it's the bug village, you know, you see him. You see Yusuf going and greeting, and these various insects are greeting him, and they're having, you know, little chats, like, you know, and there's, you know, and that I played with a little more humor, with a little pizzicato, and kind of had fun with that as well. So yeah, definitely, locations are very important and inspirational to what the music is going to sound like.
Also, the pace of the gameplay.
Yes, pace for sure.
Yeah, because it's a puzzle game. And so, conceivably, if you're not really good at figuring out puzzles, it could take a while to figure out what you're supposed to do. So, I imagine you had to write music that could loop. I mean, we talked about this before with the singer, but you had to take that into consideration as well with providing loops for as long as it might take to figure out the puzzles.
Yeah, I don't remember if there is also a part of silence being an active part of a bigger musical loop, you know, like one part of vocal, non-vocal, and then silence, bit, and then again music. So, yeah, I guess the music is crazy, but it also needs to leave some space for the gamer to be able to think and solve puzzles. At the time, so it can be too intense for that reason.
Yeah, actually, that's true, because there are places where it's just, you're kind of just alone to try to figure it out, and you don't have the wallpaper of music constantly in the background, so that was...
Which I like, by the way. I don't like movies or games where the music is just all the time, because then its ability to confer emotions is limited by just its ubiquity everywhere, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are some really amazing tracks that do stand out because they sound so different. And Mikolai, one of the ones that I really would like to talk with you about is the Three Procedures, because you incorporated so many like mechanical sounds, and they are in the game, loudly ticking clocks and bells and that kind of thing. But that it's such an interesting track.
So this is actually an occasion where there are some percussion sounds, and as far as I remember, I think most of them are coming from piano, grand piano sounds, percussive sounds. The reason for it is this particular map is you go through weird kind of machinery. And so, you know, the music reflects that, but also the whole bureaucracy that's happening in the game is a machinery as well, very repetitive, very numbing a machine. So the music reflects that as well. And that's the reason for all the mechanic sounds. I also wanted to stick out because the map, this particular map, is unique compared to all the other ones.
Yeah, wow. It's such an incredible sound. And yeah, as I said, it does really stand out. And Gary, what were some of the tracks that you worked on that you tweaked the instrumentation with, or they just were especially fun to work on?
Oh, gosh, I like Harbor Q. I like Bug Village. That was really fun. Just sort of kind of intentionally creating a sense of humor. They were all interesting cues to work on. I was really grateful to OvidWorks for being really totally open to this really unique style that we had selected, and really kind of I don't remember changing that much. Do you, Nikolai? I mean, I don't remember getting like feedback. No. Like it was like, oh, this is not working for us. Can you fix this? So no. It was
maybe
really,
one comment like this.
Yeah, so it was really pretty cool, but I really like the harbor. I like, and that incorporates some of Nikolai's theme as well. Yeah, I mean they were all just fun cues to work on, from my perspective.
Wow, it's just like, well, like I said, it's not like any other soundtrack I've heard, I think ever. So, was part of the joy of working on it, working with a small developer too, so that they would kind of let you take chances?
Yeah, that's the exactly what you said, Kate. When you work with an indie game developer, you have way more freedom, and you know, they usually very open to your ideas. And so that was the case with OvidWorks.
I remember I had an agent once, and she had a little comic on her desk at her office, and it was, the comic was two guys were talking, and one person had a script, and the guy was looking, says, and the executive who was reading, looking at the script from the author, says, "We can't do this. It's never been done before." And so,
yeah,
which is kind of the idea, of course. But yeah, definitely. And I can say there are. I've worked on AAA games where they've been pretty open to unique stuff, like BioShock, for instance. But of course, I don't think they knew how big of a game it was, so they kind of let me do my crazy stuff. This game, I mean, I think. I think if we delivered stuff that didn't work, they would have been like, no.
Yeah, they would sense that. They'll be able to tell us. It's not like they didn't know, they didn't feel what was happening musically.
Yeah, I think we were just really clued into their game, you know.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were hip to what Kafka means. You know, Kafka's opus is really important to world literature and art. And so I think we captured that zeitgeist, to use a German word, of Kafka, you know, and really, I think both of us felt it, and they just kind of sensed, yeah, these guys are in the right place. I do recall, as you said about a uniqueness, I remember many years ago, I was like making a list of like unique sounds that or instrumentation or ideas that I'd like to incorporate in a score someday, and Sprechstimme was one of those on the list, and I thought, okay, this is the least likely one to ever get incorporated in any kind of a score, because it'll never work, you know. And then when this came along, I go, woo, I think this is the ticket, you know.
Get that off my bucket list.
That is just so cool. Yeah, I wouldn't have ever put money on hearing Sprechstimme.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that would be the one that'd be the loser bet.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
But the best odds on that one.
Yeah, definitely. Well, is there anything that I missed that I didn't get around to asking you guys that you'd like people to know about what it was like working on this project?
Like I said, it was pure fun and joy, and you know, it was very fulfilling artistically for both of us. The thing about the soundtrack is that, you know, when you study music at the college or university, you go through a lot of interesting materials. You study these amazing composers from the past. And then the reality outside, the scholar years hits you. And it's very scarce that you get to... you know, utilize this amazing vocabulary that you dealt with during your study years. And, you know, we were very lucky to come across such project that really let us dive into this kind of more sophisticated, so to speak, kind of music. And therefore, it was so fun, yeah. And then we hope that the gamers have fun too. But from what I saw, the game is getting nice reviews.
Oh yeah, there was a phenomenal review in the Washington Post that I came upon, which is really cool. Oh, so, you know,
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know that. I'll have to look for that one. But, you know, from my perspective, it, you know, as I think about it now, it's like someone was paying us to like just have fun. So how cool is that? You know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, sometimes you work on these scores and you're reworking and rewriting, and it's a pain in the rear. I mean, it's I'm not complaining. Someone's paying.
Yeah, that's the most money anybody did composing 12-tone music.
That's right.
In the history of humanity.
Well, there's an old joke about the jazz musician who got jury duty, and he didn't want to do it until he found out it paid $5 a day or something. But this was one of those gigs where we should have paid to do it, you know, because it was just so much fun. And look, we're sitting here talking with Kate Remington about how cool our score is. So it's really, really delightful in every respect, and didn't feel like work. It really just felt like, how can I be creative? You know, you had a deadline. We had to deliver it, obviously, all those sorts of things. But those are actually kind of useful, because sometimes if I don't have work and I want to start writing, and I just, the day goes by, ooh, I didn't work on that, my thing today, you know. But there's nothing like a deadline to get the creative juices flying. So yeah, it was...
Well,
it,
Yeah, and also, Gary, now you've got a perfect example of how you can use 12-tone music in a game to share with your classes. So, you know.
Exactly. This is a great example of that. And you know, I do tell them, like, everything you learn, and it's true, just about everything I ever learned or studied in music has come back and I found a way to use it in some really interesting, creative way. So you just never know some thing that you hate in music school, some, you know, writing fugues or whatever. I actually liked writing fugues, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what would you hate in music school, especially in the U.S.? Come on.
What did I hate in music school?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I was never good, like, I didn't have good sense of taking dictation. So if the teacher would play a series of notes and I had to write them out,
be stressful.
I'm not good at. Some people are like brilliant; they have perfect pitch, and yeah. That would stress me out like crazy trying to, you know. So that was the thing I hated in music school. Wow.
I hated being put on the spot to sight read something. That was like my worst nightmare.
Yeah, that as well. That's what the cool thing about being a composer is, like, you know, and not being a performer, where you can really have time to think about it and get it all done without anybody watching or bothering you, and then you present it as a fully fleshed out idea, as opposed to just being on the spot and performing live, which I'm
exactly.
Not.
Yeah.
Somebody else has to sight read it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it has been so much fun to catch up with both of you. And honestly, this score, it's just phenomenal. And it's neat to know that you guys had so much fun working on it. So thank you both so much.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks so much.
Kate, thanks for inviting us on. It's really fun.